I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Man, who's on the wheels of steel today? Hit me with a little crazy Phil Collins right now. There, you're doing it well today, man. What's going on back there?
Just doing what we can.
Solid work. Solid work. All up and down the board. I mean, you hit us with a little Luther. Hit me with a little Phil Collins. Who knows what you're going to be. You know what? That might be worth the listen all morning. Just to figure out what the bumps are going to be.
I came in today saying it's 80s day at the studio.
It's 80s day? It's 80s day, Shamari. They're telling me it's 80s day.
I'm an 80s baby. I'm not mad at it at all. I'm digging it.
I'll let it be known. I mean, people already know I'm old. I was in London for Live Aid. So I didn't go to Live Aid, but I was in London studying. I was doing my college studies in London while Live Aid was going on. So I was watching it on the BBC. That's how. So I remember. I remember what was going on in the 80s, my friend. That was some good times.
Remember,
maybe we'll get the best of Live Aid.
Portion of it.
Yes, yes. All right, let's talk a little NBA.
That means we're going to get some Queen.
Well, you're right. That's the thing. Maybe between now and when we're done, we'll get ourselves a little bit of Queen. Here's what we've got. A lot of NBA stuff to discuss. We always like to go to our good friend Mark Medina, who joins us here on 95.7 The Game. You always take a look at what Mark does with his great work. Now, he used to be a local guy, right? NBA writer for the USA Today, used to write for the Mercury News. Mark Medina joins us here on a Sunday. Mark, thanks for coming on with Shamari and Coase. How you doing today, buddy?
It's good to hear your voice. The caveats of 2020 and 2021 aside, I'm good, healthy, and plugging away, and
good
to connect with you again.
Good, man. That's great to have you on. Thanks so much for coming on. Let's start with this one. I'm going to have some fun. Where do you stand with the Brooklyn Nets jerseys that James Harden and company were wearing? Where are you with the tie-dye?
I am not feeling those colors. They're just way too bright, and I don't think it's a good look. I think that this has been kind of a league-wide trend this season of teams wearing light blue. I don't get it. Like, why can't you either go white when you're at home or another color that's not blue when you're away? I'm thumbs down for that.
Hey, Mark Medina, how's it going? This is Shamari Block here. The block is hot.
Shamari,
so you wrote an article. Yeah, good talk with you as well. So you wrote an article on Wednesday that I read that was very interesting to me, and it's relating to the Nets, and it's not about the god-awful uniforms, but you said something very interesting. So I personally, when I saw that James Harden's going to the Nets, I'm like, three head cases, this is just going to be great to watch and not lead to a championship. But you specifically said that James Harden wouldn't get along well with Kyrie Irving. And you didn't say Kevin Durant. Tell the listeners kind of why you think specifically those two aren't going to jive.
Well, specifically with Kyrie and Harden, I mean, they're two ball-dominant guys. They've been known in recent years to kind of march the beat to their own drum, for better and for worse. And with Kevin Durant, as you guys know, when he was with the Warriors, hey, he may have gotten criticism for leaving OKC and, you know, the drama with his social media accounts. But one thing that he always got credit for was not only did he play at a high level, but he, for the most part, complimented his all-star teammates pretty well and blended in with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. And I think that he has the versatility and adaptability. Those were two words that Nets coach Steve Nash used yesterday. to be able to blend in with anyone. But I don't think that those two guys in particular, Harden or Irving, can carry through. And I don't think it's a coincidence at all that when you looked at the debut that Harden had yesterday against Orlando, as much as you think it's an encouraging sign that, hey, he had 32 points, he had 14 assists, 12 rebounds, he's trying to be unselfish and send a message that he's going to sacrifice, you have to equate that Kyrie wasn't playing because he, you know, has been out for personal reasons, but then the NBA fined him $50,000 because he was breaking the health and safety protocols, so he was still out there. So I'm really intrigued and also skeptical, as you noted in that story, on once Irving comes back, how will that dynamic work? And look, I'm sure early on, because they know the narrative and they want to send a message, that there will be moments where they are deferring to each other. But large sample size, and as it plays out through the season, I just don't see how that pair is going to work specifically.
Boy, they're going to get a lot of eyeballs. There's no question about that, Mark
exactly.
Medina. I know. NBA writer for the USA Today joining us, 95.7 The Game. Another team in that trade that I initially thought, well, they've hit reset. I want to ask you this about the Houston Rockets. Sure, Boogie Cousins is coming back from an injury. Sure, John Wall is doing the same. And you bring in Oladipo, who's also trying to come back. He had a tough injury as well a couple of years ago. Are the Houston Rockets hitting reset, or do they think they can still compete right now with this unit and with all the draft capital they got, maintain a quality franchise for years to come?
You know, I think it remains to be seen, but I think what they did with those deals is they aligned themselves to be able to pivot accordingly. Now, if I'm looking at them, last year when they have James Harden and Russell Westbrook and, you know, a pretty good supporting cast in terms of shooters compared to this year's team, there's a reason why James Harden won now. So I don't think that there's any debate that the Rockets aren't going to be as good as they were last year, and I think that they will be on the outside looking into the playoffs. But there is a recipe for them to, you know, not only lean onto that underdog mentality, but have the stars align where you have John Wall coming back from injury and, you know, trying to prove that he can still play at an elite level. DeMarcus Cousins as well. Victor Oladipo has always been great, and I think really, you know, his issues in last year is he just didn't want to be in Indiana long term because he doubted the future there as far as their ability to compete in the Eastern Conference. So I think that there is a recipe for them to sneak into the playoffs because of the unconventional nature of the season and their ability to overachieve. But I could also see them, you know, not making the playoffs and having to compete for lottery balls. But as your point, they also have a lot of assets that can help them long term.
Another thing about the Nets, I think, and this trade and getting James Harden, I think one underrated thing is that they gave up Jared Allen and Caris LeVert. So you lose a lot of depth. So the question I'm curious, the thing I'm curious about from your perspective is how big of a net gain is James Harden given, and let's just eliminate the draft stuff in the future. This year, how big of a net gain do you think that James Harden is given that you lost LeVert and you lost Jared Allen?
Yeah, I don't think – if I were the Nets, I wouldn't have done the deal. I think that you're better off, you know, leaning on Kevin and Kyrie and then using the strength of numbers. That's something that the Warriors did really well. And, you know, after the fact – and you don't want to be crass about this because you want to be sensitive – but it came out that Caris LeVert has an injury, and so he's out indefinitely. And so maybe – that casualty isn't going to be as severe, but I think the larger point that you're making is valid, that they had so much depth, they had so much culture that they had been able to home grow, and now you're assembling a super team where it's completely championship or bust this season. And so I think because of the fact that they made that decision, look, Kyrie and Harden can prove me and others wrong. But even in the worst-case scenario, what might wind up happening is maybe Harden is here to give the Nets a decision to make of, okay, which player do we choose, one or the other? You know, do we wind up trading Kyrie later on to get more assets in return and more depth because this experiment isn't working? But my skepticism aside, the Nets did make this decision knowing how the temperature is in the room. You know, if if there was a sense that Kevin Durant wasn't on board with this, or, you know, Steve Nash, and they themselves felt it wasn't going to work, they wouldn't have pulled the trigger. But I just fall on the other line that, again, I don't think Harden and Irving are a good pair because of, you know, the similarities in their game and also their attitude.
Just to circle back on Caris LeVert, they found a mass on his kidney. We certainly hope that he is okay. You don't want that to get out of hand. We hope that he's going to be healthy and safe and eventually get back to playing for his new team, which would be the Indiana Pacers, as we continue along the way here on a Sunday morning with Mark Medina, who's the NBA writer for the USA Today. We've asked you a lot about the Nets. I want to turn it over to the Western Conference. I thought the Lakers were upset at the league for starting on December 22nd, and they were going to rest, and they were going to ease their way into the season this year. And then I look at the Western Conference, and I see the team sitting on top is 11-3, and it's the Los Angeles Lakers. They're not taking too much time off this year. That surprises me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they certainly were upset, as all teams were, that they started so early because of just how taxing this year has been and the bubble extending into October. But it helps when you have a really good team. And going into the season, there was this feeling that the Lakers were going to try to thread the needle of, okay, now's the time to try to do some load management on LeBron James. He's 36. Anthony Davis is in his prime, but he's coming off this finals run that ended in October. But I think where the Lakers want to avoid that load management route is they can look down the hall at the Clippers to see how that went last year. And it's a little bit apples and oranges in the sense that the Clippers did that because they were dealing with more serious injuries with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. But the casualty of that is they didn't have a lot of practice time with their teammates, and the chemistry was inconsistent. And so I think with the Lakers, look, they don't need LeBron, James, and Anthony Davis to practice per se to get them better. They know everything going on. But there's a lot of new pieces that they got with Montrezl Harrell and Marcus Gasol and Dennis Schroeder and Wesley Matthews. And so I think they didn't want to dilute that process of those guys' ability to get some chemistry time with their star players. And so as a result, they've been kind of playing as usual. But I think that if there is a scenario this season where LeBron gets a minor injury or Anthony gets a minor injury, they will rest them. They're not going the Tom Thibodeau route here and just exhausting them in the regular season. But at this point, you know, they haven't really had to deal with much major injuries.
So when you talk about the Lakers and their hot start, do you think that the number one seed matters to the Lakers? Is that why they're gonna push it so they can get that number one seed? And also, do you think they're kind of using a strategy where let's get off to a hot start, build a big lead, and then we'll rest players later towards the end of the season?
Yeah, that's a really good point. To answer your first question, I don't think they care about the number one seed, especially, you know, it's the NBA's hope that eventually fans can get back in the building. But right now, like, home court advantage doesn't really mean anything beyond the fact that you see the logo on the floor, right? But I think the second point you made is a very valid one and is also part of their strategy that, hey, if you get off to hot starts, Frank Vogel can do load management on LeBron James and Anthony Davis in the fourth quarter, right? And that is a trickle-down of not only do you get those guys rest and preserve them for the next game, but you're also getting, you know, the supporting cast really valuable playing experience. And that can, you know, obviously lead to a lot better things if they're put in a situation in the playoffs where, you know, there's an unforeseen injury or one of those guys gets double-teamed or those guys – prepared for that moment. So I think that is one of many things that the Lakers are hoping for. But again, if it does get to the point where there are injuries they have to manage, they will sit them down. That is the number one priority. But fortunately for their case, they haven't really had to weigh that too much.
The great Mark Medina, the NBA writer for the USA Today, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. I know we've been all over the NBA. We want to lock it down here. We're the home of the Warriors. We've got to ask you some Warrior questions.
Of course.
We had one from in fact, it might have been Shamari. We had another one from a texter earlier today. Shaking up the starting lineup. Why not move Pascal into the starting lineup and move Draymond in with the second unit to try to get some offense bolstered early? The starters are getting outscored by almost 11 points per ball game. But what about mixing up the starting lineup if you're Steve Kerr?
Yeah, okay. Mix up the starting lineup, but I don't see how bringing Draymond off the bench is going to solve things. I mean, number one, the optics of that doesn't look great. But I think the most important thing is the value of Draymond Green being a starter is you're pairing him with Steph Curry. They're the motor that runs the offense, and they complement each other well, where Steph's going to get his shot, he's going to play make, Draymond can play make and get guys open looks. And then also, look, Draymond's had mixed success with this season, but, you know, in theory, he's going to be the guy that helps establish the tone on defense with his own play and his influence out there. And if you're going to have him come off the bench, all of a sudden you're losing all that capital to help guys get off to a good start. But I think to the larger point of mixing and matching lineups, I think that there is a fair debate of, you know, to what extent should Steve Kerr be staggering Draymond and Steph later on so that the burden just doesn't fall on them at the same time and there is a really good playmaker with the supporting cast. You know, can you separate Eric Paschal and Kevon Looney so they're not getting in the way of each other? Those are fair things, but believe me, Draymond's not going to be coming off the bench anytime soon.
So let's talk about another guy that people, at least here, would like to see go to the bench, Kelly Oubre.
Yeah.
Kelly Oubre, obviously, he's off to a bad start. It hasn't been good. The three-point shooting's not there. But Kelly Oubre came here with the track record that made the Warriors believe that he was worth his salary plus another, like, $50 million in salary cap money. Before Kelly Oubre got here, what was it about Kelly Oubre that people believed made him not just a guy?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, he was getting numbers, and he would have really good moments, and you wonder, okay, when you're in possibly a better environment than Phoenix, can he flourish even more? And I think that he's in this middle of the road that is he more than just empty calories, right? And I think with when you're looking at the Warriors – yes, they devoted all this money to him, but it was under the guise of different things here. They spent that money because they wanted to have as much of a competitive roster as they could, as opposed to not using that exception at all. So when you're looking at his contract per se, the Warriors may not have thought, hey, he's worth exactly X amount of dollars that we're using with that exception, but we'd rather spend that than not have as much of a competitive roster as we could, and that's the best option. But I think that they had optimism that he could be a somewhat dependable scoring threat, and then I think most importantly, a really good defensive option. I mean, this probably opens up the conversation even more because of Andrew Wiggins and his inconsistency, but Steve Kerr addressed the team and said to those guys the other day at practice that he expects that both those guys could be in consideration to get on the All-NBA defensive team. And whether that's realistic or not, we'll see. But I think the overriding message was, you know, it's not so much about you hitting shots. You know, that's a bonus. But if nothing else, we need consistent defensive performances because that's going to help us, you know, scrape against teams where, you know, it's going to be decided in the single digits. So as much as Kelly needs to hit shots more consistently, as well as Andrew, I think the bigger thing is on defense and what their level of effectiveness is there and if it's going to be solely predicated on if they're hitting shots on the other end of the floor. And that can't be the case because, as we've seen, they've been really inconsistent with that.
Mark Medina joining us, 95.7 The Game. Mark, if I gave you the Warriors 36-36 at the end of the year, would you sign on the dotted line right now, or do you think they have a potential to be better than that?
Yeah, they have a potential to be better than that, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. I think what they're going to be riding through this whole season is they're going to be floating slightly above or below 500 the entire year because you're going to have moments of Steph and Draymond being at their best and then them having nights off and the supporting cast just isn't up to snuff. And then you're going to see, you know, maybe one of those guys have a breakout game and then just games where it's close and it could go either way. they don't have that kind of talent and depth to really just blow teams out of the water. But I think, you know, where the Warriors might have an advantage over some of the other teams that are going to be fighting for that playoff spot is they at least have some more continuity than some other young teams like, you know, the New Orleans Pelicans or the Memphis Grizzlies or the Oklahoma City Thunder that are, you know, technically tied there. But I think for better and for worse, the other separation is, you know, throughout this year, how much will COVID-related absences or just injuries itself, you know, play a factor? And so I think because of that, the Warriors are always going to be in that mix because any team is going to be subject to that. But at the same time, so are the Warriors. I mean, if that happens to them where they're losing Steph or Draymond for an extended period of time, that's going to be devastating. They've already seen how tough that can be with, you know, Draymond missing the first four games of the year and then him trying to get back into a rhythm and get comfortable with everything. So it's just going to be a lot of messy moving parts throughout the year, but I don't expect them to be competing for the lottery again. I think this will be a competitive season where they do have a legitimate shot at sneaking in as a 6th, 7th, or 8th seed.
Oh, I hope you're right. I really hope you're right. As a lifelong Dubs fan, Mark, the Warriors at their best, at least as I believe, and, you know, in general, because, you know, I know what I'm talking about. the Warriors were, for all of the offensive prowess, for all of the Steph, the Clay, the threes, the Warriors won championships because they had a elite defense and really, really good defenders. This year, the offense is bottom third in most meaningful categories. The defense is bottom third in most meaningful categories. But the question I might ask you is, when you look at the offense and the defense, which part of this team do you think has the most room for improvement? Would you say, like, when both offense and defense hit their ceiling, which one's going to have improved the most?
I think it's the defense, because it remains to be seen how talented they can be defensively, but defense can be more easily addressed than offense because a lot of it has to do with effort. And I think because of that, that's why Steve Kerr has addressed to his team about, look, this is our identity. It's about defense. He knows that that was a staple during the championship years. And that really depends on two things here. And one thing I'm confident on, the other I'm not sure. Or it's three things. Two things I'm confident on, the other, well, I'm not sure. Draymond obviously has got to be consistently engaged and healthy, and I think that for the most part he will be that throughout the year for his own sake and then just setting the tone. And then secondly, James Wiseman, I think that he's been really encouraging, even though that, you know, he's still figuring things out as far as decision-making and, you know, personnel and X's and O's and where to catch lobs. Like, his effort on defense is exceptional. But the third part that I'm not so sure on is everyone else. And that falls under Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins. At least for the games that I've seen, there's times where they really seem to be buying into that, and then other times where it seems like they're allowing their off nights to affect how they play on the other end of the floor. And I don't want to have those guys escape responsibility for what they're doing. Look, they're being paid a lot of money. They're professional athletes. But I think realistically, the expectations can't be on them to be reliable scoring options because they just haven't shown that they're capable of doing that. But I think that it's more realistic to ask them, okay, if you're not going to be those guys, you got to at least be a dependable energy defensive guy that can slow the game down and make a few more possessions more difficult for the other team. And if you do all those little things, there's going to be so many games that the Warriors have where it's a few possessions away against another team, and that could be the deciding scale of whether they get that win or not. And then all of a sudden, it could be a snowball effect between determining do they get that playoff spot or are they on the outside looking in.
Mark, before we let you go, you got anything special coming up with the USA Today as you cover the NBA?
Man, I mean, it just seems like there's so much going on all the time. So, you know, I've been writing a lot about the health and safety protocols and how that's playing out. I mean, as you know, there's been 10 postponed games. Will that get better? You know, Martin Luther King Day, there's going to be a lot of social justice stuff tomorrow. And then, you know, unfortunately, I hate to say it, but it's a reality. I mean, we're shortly away from the one-year anniversary of the Kobe and Gianna Bryant tragedy. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of stuff on there, too. But, you know, you hope that there's more good news than bad news with all this. I mean, I'm, you know, I've been in the business long enough where I'm past the point of caring about who wins or not. But you don't want those real-life things to be a factor. So hopefully, you know, the health and safety gets under control better, where the league's not having to postpone games, and hopefully, you know, everyone affected by the NBA community with the Kobe and Gianna tragedy can somehow use this anniversary as some sort of coping mechanism to reflect on the positive, as opposed to, you know, it being another reminder of how tough of a year it's been.
Oh, you're right. What is that? Is it January 22nd?
January 26th.
26th. January 26th. Wow, that is coming up. All right, Mark. Well, thanks for giving us a big part of your Sunday morning. We do appreciate it. Stay safe out there. We'll read your stuff in the USA Today. Hopefully we can do it again real soon, pal.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on. Always great talking hoops. And more importantly, hope you guys can stay safe and continue to hang in there and do well.
Thanks, man. We appreciate it. The great Mark Medina. You read his stuff in the USA Today. He's their great NBA writer, and he joins us here on 95.7 The Game. All right, we need to step aside. We had a long chunk right there, but it's always great talking to Mark. We'll clean that up in a second. We got to talk about the NFL. The game's played yesterday, and we got to talk about what's coming up today, including that what most people are saying is the headliner is the Brady versus Breeze. But, you know, this game between Kansas City and Cleveland could be interesting as well. Kansas City's not 100%. We'll get into some of that when we continue. Shamari Block, Jim Cozumel with you. You can get us at 888-957-9570. That's the text line. That's also our phone number. 888-957-9570 right here on 95.7 The Game.
Don't stop me now. Don't stop me.
'Cause I'm having a good time. Having a good time.
I'm a shooting star, leaping through the
now
sky.
Back to 95.7 The Game.
The laws of gravity. I'm a racing car, passing by like Lady Godiva.
This is good stuff right here, brother. I like this. This, I don't know if you've ever seen the James Corden show, the Late Late Show. He did a sing-off with, I'm trying to think who, who's the guy who was taken over as the lead singer? I'm starting to lose my train of thought. Yes, Adam Lambert. He did a, thank you for that. I appreciate that. He did a sing-off with Adam Lambert to be the lead singer for the band, and it is a great bit. You can go on YouTube and check it out. I'll tell you, that James Corden's a pretty talented little fellow, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He can sing. That guy can sing. He's pretty darn good. All right, we got to move it along here. Shamari Block, Jim Cozumel with you. It's a Sunday morning. Hope you're enjoying your morning, out on your walk, out for a drive, out going somewhere. Be safe when you do it. And thanks for bringing Radio.com and 95.7 The Game along for the ride as well. You know, Shamari, we were talking about home court advantage and whether or not you get home court advantage in the NBA. So far this season, home teams are 92-92. That is telling me that there is no home court advantage in the NBA.
At all, whatsoever. Yeah, yeah. No, definitely. That's literally balanced, perfectly even balanced. You are no more or less likely to win at home than on the road.
It is amazing to see what a dip. Didn't that tell you how important the crowd is then? The NBA is the one league where you say, well, if you got a 7-game series and you got the 4 games at home in the 7-game series, most likely you're going to win the series. And it tends to work out that way. I think the NBA's numbers are incredibly overweighted to the team with the home court advantage usually ends up getting the victory more so than any other sport. NHL, didn't they have they had a finals, I think, recently in which all 7 games were won by the road team. And in the NBA, it just doesn't happen that much in the National Basketball Association. And that is really starting to play out by the fact that if there's a crowd, it certainly weighs differently. Because there is no sport like the NBA where the crowd is right there, courtside. I mean, you can feel the sweat of these guys when they're running by you. You're that close. That just tells you how important the crowd is. And I know the crowd's going to be important to the players and to the owners when it comes to the finances. But it's also, honestly, Shamari, it's important to the atmosphere for all of us.
And it's kind of funny because me personally, every time you hear, you know, when, for instance, you know, you post-game interview, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, oh, yeah, yeah, well, we played a great game, and Dub Nation, we couldn't have done it without you. And it's kind of like that thing where a band or a group or whatever city they're in is their favorite city, right? It's like,
yep.
We love you, San Francisco. So when I'd hear all these players and you hear the front office people say things like that, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, badminton, I kind of felt like, yeah, right. They're saying that because, you know, that's how you sell tickets. People are like, oh, I have to show up and support Steph Curry, right?
Yeah.
But this is definitive proof to everyone listening right now. This is definitive proof. You do need to show up and support Steph Curry. Steph Curry gets off. He gets your energy. And everyone, across every arena. Because the other thing that you always hear, whatever team wins a championship or whatever, we have the best fans in the world, you know? And again, I mean, they probably do. I mean, they may not believe that, you know, because we have the best fans here in the Bay Area. When you talk about Roracle, when you talk about the Black Hole, when you talk about the Niner Gang, oh no, man, I think we got it over. Even like cities with maniacal fan bases like Boston, like we got our own vibe here. But this, if nothing else, kind of actually lends validity to that idea that you as a fan in the arena, in the stadium, in the ballpark, impact the game.
Absolutely you do, and we can't wait for all of us to get back there. No matter how you choose to do it, when you choose to do it, when you feel safe, everyone's looking forward to getting back to more of what we called a normalcy, and hopefully that does happen in 2021. Shamari Block, Jim Cosimo with you at 95.7 The Game. We've done a lot of NBA and a lot of Golden State Warriors so far today. Why don't we shift gears into the National Football League? Two games played yesterday. My one fear in the NFL this year is, Shamari, that while they added one extra team in each conference, seven playoff teams, that only gave one team a bye in each conference. Green Bay on the one side, Kansas City on the other. My fear is that 1 week layoff for both of those teams gives them such an advantage at health and preparation that if we see those teams in the Super Bowl, it's going to be a great game with two great quarterbacks, but I'm a little bit afraid that they have too much of an advantage by making everyone else play the extra game. I just don't know if it's going to be a fair playoff. And Green Bay, I mean, they came out and they put their best foot forward. We'll see how it goes for Kansas City today.
But exactly. But the thing with that is that the NFL doesn't care. They wanted another playoff game or two more playoff games so they can get more money. So that's not going anywhere. The checks have been signed. They've been cashed. That's not coming back. But I do understand what you say when you say that. The one thing that I think, obviously, is that it puts more significance on being that number one seed. So as where you get teams that are like, oh, well, we could be number one, number two, we'll get the bye, we're going to rest our guys. That one's not going to happen anymore because you want to be that number one because you need that advantage because the game of football is so physical and it takes so much out of you that 1 week, one bye week in a football season is like a month in an NBA season. And if you don't believe me, look at the Rams against the Packers yesterday. The Rams had the number one defense. They got toasted. Aaron Rodgers toasted them, threw the ball all over the field. But furthermore, the Rams lost by two touchdowns. And that's okay. But the Rams lost by two touchdowns, and they didn't turn the ball over. How often do teams have zero turnovers and lose by that kind of margin? If that happens, it's kind of like you never stood a chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hear you. And with that said, I just want to say, I think Jared Goff showed he's one tough hombre for having to come back after that ugly, ugly thumb situation. And he's forced into action last week against Seattle, gets the win. He had him in the game primarily yesterday. I mean, they had their opportunities. I got to give him credit. I know they lost by two scores, but give him credit for being tough, man.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Hey, Bay Area zone. What was it?
Marin Catholic?
Kid, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. No, Jared Goff obviously is not elite, right? But Jared Goff is a lot better, I think, than a lot of people give him credit for. Mm-hmm. And again, he quarterbacked them to a Super Bowl. And when I say quarterbacked them to a Super Bowl, his offensive production, his passing, his running an offense strongly contributed to him winning. And I don't want to talk about our quarterback, the Niners quarterback, but largely that quarterback through the playoffs.
Porn star, Jimmy!
He kind of just sat back and, you know, handed the ball off 74 times a game all the way to the Super Bowl, and then didn't make the throws in the last minute. But he didn't. I feel Goff's Super Bowl run, he contributed more to that Super Bowl run that the Rams had a couple of years back than Jimmy did to last year's Super Bowl run. Which, again, I'm not knocking Jimmy. I'm just saying Goff is legit. And, again, he's not elite. He's not elite. Neither is Jimmy. Most quarterbacks in the NFL aren't. They're like four elite guys and then a couple of guys that used to be elite that people think are but definitely aren't. We're going to watch two of those guys play later today. Goff's legit, man. I've been down with Goff. I was calling for the Niners to draft Goff. I was also calling for them to draft Watson, by the way. You know, that's a whole other story.
I've been on Goff.
Right. Oh, that rabbit hole can go the next 3 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, Goff, he is what he was advertised as coming out of college, and that's legit. He's totally legit.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned Deshaun Watson, and that's going to be a storyline we'll get into in just a second. But I still wonder why the 49ers don't take more heat for passing on Mahomes and Watson. They had the opportunity to draft them. They made the trade with Chicago, and the Bears made the poor maneuver to go after Mitchell Trubisky. And then the 49ers are laying there. They needed a quarterback, and I know Kyle Shanahan addressed it afterwards, saying, listen, we thought more players was important to us building an infrastructure. Getting more guys that of talent around the football field was important than getting the quarterback right now. And they passed on Mahomes and Watson. They passed on them once. You're not going to get Mahomes. You might get a chance at Watson right now. How much, Shamari, are you kicking the tires with the Houston Texans saying, hey, listen, you got a quarterback who's unhappy down there. We might be able to find a pairing for you.
I'm not kicking the tires. I'm going full on Hamptons 5, okay? I'm flying.
Whoa!
I'm flying the coaching staff. I'm flying the Yorks, okay? I'm flying everybody out to Houston. We're going to sit out front of Deshaun Watson's home and be like, and sing him Christmas carols, whatever, okay? You go all in. Deshaun Watson makes you an instant contender, even if you have to give up a significant piece. Deshaun Watson is the kind of quarterback, which, again, Jimmy G, really, really good quarterback, not elite. Deshaun Watson can make up for, well, look what he did this year. Almost 5,000 yards, a whole bunch of touchdowns, only 7 interceptions. After losing DeAndre Hopkins on a team that had some of the worst blocking, that didn't really have any good targets, and then you bring him here, you got Kittle. You got Trent Williams protecting your blind side. How well you think he'll do in Mike Shanahan's offense?
This year is our year!
Right? What do you think the ceiling is with Deshaun Watson as a Niner?
MVP? Let me tell you, you got George Kittle, you got Debo Samuel coming back, who's got speed and size. You've got a play-calling mind like Kyle Shanahan, who can X and O with some of the best of them in the National Football League. I haven't even mentioned Brandon Ayuk, and you still have the strength of an awesome running game. I'm telling you, Deshaun, you go and get Deshaun Watson. If you overpay to go get Deshaun Watson, that's fine by me. You got to do whatever it takes. And Deshaun Watson, he ain't making it a secret that he wants out. I mean, him sending out the picture of him in the Joe Montana jersey is something that's kind of interesting to me, whether it's San Francisco he wants to go to or anywhere he wants to go to. But if I'm the 49ers, I'm like you. I think you got to go full Hamptons 5. And I know that you can't do that. There's tampering. But what I'm saying is you go all in on trying to find out if there's some type of match that you could make. You find out what it would take for Houston to get the guy. Is it two number ones? Well, then trade Jimmy to the Bears for their number one because the Bears need a new quarterback. Get the Bears number one. Match it with your number one. Give them some other goodies because you got two threes for Robert Sala getting the head coaching job with the Jets, and all of a sudden you might have the beginnings of a deal to go and get Deshaun Watson.
Ooh, okay, I didn't even think about that because when I thought about that deal, people were saying, "Oh, trade Jimmy G and blah blah picks for Deshaun Watson." I'm like, Houston doesn't want Jimmy G.
It don't work
like Jimmy G. Yeah, but you know what? The Bears might, because Jimmy G on the Bears with that defense, he can do what he did last year for the Bears. For the Niners, for the Bears. That is good. That's a good one. That's a really good one.
I'm telling you, that, listen, the Bears are in a desperation space, and here's what good franchises do. They sniff out teams that have a weakness or a desperation, and the 49ers have a smart infrastructure. I really believe in John Lynch, and I really believe in Kyle Shanahan, all right? I think they should take some heat. I think they've made some mistakes, but everyone makes some mistakes. But I think they also sniff out teams that are desperate, and the Bears are desperate for a quarterback. Jimmy G is from suburban Chicago. He went to college in the state of Illinois. He's a guy you can sell to that Bears fan base and say, look, we're bringing in a Super Bowl-caliber quarterback because Jimmy G was a quarterback for a Super Bowl team, and you give up your number one because the Bears are going to have to overpay to get themselves a quarterback because they ain't going back to Mitchell Trubisky, and you know that Nick Foles can't be a 16-game guy. And now if you're the 49ers, you have to wonder if you've got enough there, draft capital. Niners have the 12th pick. The Bears have the 20th pick. So you have two picks to give to Houston, who doesn't have any first-round picks. How do you get better with no first-round picks? At least you have the start of something to try and build towards getting a conversation started on Deshaun Watson.
Okay, so last week, this same time, this same day, Kyle and I sat here and we played Who's Off Limits. And by the end of the show, no one was off limits. Who's off limits? Who don't you trade to get Deshaun Watson? Like if it means you don't get Deshaun Watson, this player is off limits.
Bosa! Bosa's off limits. Kittle's off limits. You ain't giving up anybody like that. Warner's off limits. The linebacker's off limits. They got some guys who are off limits. By the way, let me just tap this to you because our good friend, guys. Crushing it. Bonte in the mornings is crushing it with Butcher and Kate on the morning roast. Bonte just texted me, how about this? Does Nick Caserio, is he in love with Jimmy G? Because remember, he was in New England when they drafted Jimmy G. If Nick Caserio is in love with him, maybe you just go straight with your number one and a starting quarterback and you say, hey, Nick, I got your answer. Your quarterback's unhappy. I give you a guy who got to the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. I give you our first-round pick. I give you some third-round picks that we get because Robert Saleh ends up with the New York Football Jets, and now we got the makings of something. That's if the Houston Texans are looking for a quarterback. I think, and Bonte, who's also crushing it on the Warriors stuff over at NBC, he and I are co-workers over there. Great job by Bonte. He's filling in with that. I'll tell you, would you, Shamari, make that phone call and say, listen, I got Jimmy G right here. You got a starting quarterback if you want to swap, and we'll throw in some other goodies.
If the Houston Texans took Jimmy G for Deshaun Watson and something meager like a couple of first-round picks, I would feel like the Niners got over. I would feel that's a third round pick to move up one spot to take Mitchell Trubisky level of getting over. I don't think Nick Caserio, who comes from that Patriots franchise, who values picks over everything, is going to – maybe he loves Jimmy G. I don't know that anyone really right now can be that high on Jimmy Garoppolo based on the last season – the end of last season and what happened this season. I don't feel that anyone, even the Bears, now there's the marketing at standpoint that might boost the value for the Bears, as you mentioned, but I don't know that anyone would trade a first round pick for Jimmy G outside of maybe Chicago because of all the reasons you said. Do you?
You know, and that's an interesting point that you make. And I would say this, that if you take a Nick Caserio and he comes from the New England background where they do value picks, and then you start to factor in they don't have first-rounders, maybe them gaining two first-rounders is more valuable to them than getting Jimmy G and a first-rounder. Maybe they look at two first-rounders as ways. Because New England, more than any team in the National Football League, trades down. They trade back. When I say down, they trade back. If they have the 12th pick, they move it backwards and get something later to get more draft capital. They bring in more guys who are at a better price point, more bodies to churn through. That's how they get great. And, by the way, they had the greatest quarterback in the game. Now we'll see how they can build moving forward without Tom Brady this year. A little bit of a hiccup. They're under 500. But we'll see how they start to grow once they get out of their salary cap problems and they start to get guys back. Remember, they had six guys who were gone because of COVID. But maybe Houston has the same thought. You're right. Maybe they have the same thought of, we're going to value draft picks. We're going to value draft capital. You give me more picks and let me determine who I want to be my quarterback. I think the Bears would be all over Garoppolo. That's me. But then, I don't know how many other teams would be that way.
The Bears love their Chicago guys. They brought Donovan McNabb in, and they brought in Jay Cutler. So a guy who is seemingly pretty good but not necessarily elite, who's from Chicago, that sells in Chicago. The Bears will jump on that every time, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think you could be right on that thing. I would be intrigued if there will be conversations there. That would be interesting to me. Hey, I want to circle back, by the way. Robert Saleh, you know, we're finding out today, I just heard through a report, I think it was on ESPN, that the Detroit Lions are about to name their head coach. It's going to be the assistant head coach, tight ends coach for the New Orleans Saints. I think his name is Dan Campbell. Campbell's going to get the job in Detroit. Robert Saleh is a Detroit native. Are you surprised that the Lions didn't look a little bit more closely at Robert Saleh?
No, because when you talk about head coach, yeah, there's a marketing aspect of it. But Robert Saleh, okay, I'm surprised in the sense that Robert Saleh was at the top, is from what I understand, of everyone's list. And there's no doubt that you want to go home. If the Lions wanted him, I feel they would have had him way, because he's going to the Jets. And I'm sorry, if I'm a head coach, which I'm not because I just was, you know, it wasn't in the cards for me. But if I'm a head coach and I look at all these vacancies, the Jets in New York with that pressure, with that situation, were probably the least desirable team to go to. So the fact that Saleh went there, I don't know what prompted that, but I would have went to Detroit with Matthew Stafford, went home, and did that over going to the Jets. So I'm surprised because, again, like I said, I feel like he was the – and maybe this is just my bias given I'm a Niner fan. I live in the Bay Area. I watch all the Niners. I think Robert Saleh has done an otherworldly job this season in particular and last also. No one was hotter. But maybe they wanted the offensive guy. Maybe that's it, right? You think?
Yep. Yep, that could be. Our guy Bonte Hill sends this along from Adam Schefter. There's a growing sense from people in and around the Texans organization that Deshaun Watson has played his last snap for the team. It's early in the offseason. There's a lot of time left, but Watson's feelings cannot and should not be underestimated. That tells you that there could be an opening, and now is when you got to strike. Now is when you make the call. Don't give Houston a chance to smooth things out. And I know that Houston has reached out to the Buffalo Bills? Leslie Frazier, a former head coach with Minnesota, is he the defensive coordinator for Buffalo? They've reached out to Frazier for an interview. They've reached out to Eric Bieniemy, although Bieniemy has not decided whether he will interview in Houston or not, and that's the guy Deshaun Watson wanted. So you're seeing Houston start to reach out to guys trying to get interviews, but you wonder if Houston's it's maybe so poisoned right now that some people don't want to interview for it.
I don't know, but I'm going to tell you this. If you're the 49ers, just like we said, give Deshaun Watson, we'll give Houston whatever they want for Deshaun Watson. I believe that if this is not just a wet dream and Deshaun Watson is actually available, however, let me just say this. If you are the Houston Texans and you are Nick Caserio and you have half a brain, okay, you give Deshaun Watson whatever he wants. I mean, you know, within reason. If he wants to be in on the coaching decision, you let him in on it. If he wants to be in on
the... That's dangerous, man. Having guys, how many jobs do you have you had where they come to you and say, hey, Shamari, who do you want to be your manager? Who do you want to be the guy who leads the division? I'm telling you, that's a scary situation to be in because then you give that player way too much power. I mean, an awful lot of power at that point. So I just think if you want to go in and say, you know, what type of offense are you most, you know, comfortable with or what are some of the things you look for, but I can't have them X-ing and O-ing and saying, yeah, I want this coach versus that coach. I can understand schemes, but I have a harder time maybe understanding exact names and having them go with exact names.
I mean, maybe not exact names. Maybe you don't pick his coach, but you definitely have his input because at the end of the day, you look at every coach that's been successful long term, maybe with the exception of Andy Reid, right? You talk about Bill Walsh, you talk about Bill Belichick, you talk about Sean Payton in New Orleans. The only thing that a coach really needs to do to be successful in this league is identify and develop one of those quarterbacks. If you do that, you're going to have a good long career. If you don't, you're not. Regardless of how well you coach deep, regardless of how well your defense is, regardless of how you well you scheme things with your mediocre quarterback, if you find one of those guys, if you find that Deshaun Watson, you are going to be a successful head coach.
Yep, I think you're right. Hey, how about this? Our guy Sam Lubman, who's producing this fine mess, he's found this from Adam Schefter. According to Schefter, one league source connected to the Texans head coaching situation said Saturday, quote, "It's gone from the least desirable head coaching job opening to the most undesirable head coaching job in the NFL. That's a fact. That's how that job is looked at by everybody. So it's not only it's the least desirable head coaching opening, now it's the most undesirable head coaching job in the National Football League. Wow. What are you going to land if that's the image of what's going on? You're going to, you know what? You're going to look at a coach who's desperate to get into it, and there's going to have to be a head coach who's going to be desperate to take that thing.
And that's definitely not well for keeping Watson's, which reminds me, I have to go now. I need to go to Houston and commit a kidnapping.
At least you're letting the authorities know, man. At least you're letting them know. You know, we were talking about Robert Saleh, and are you surprised he didn't end up in Detroit? Our good friend Doobie in Chicago always does a great job, and thanks so much, Doobie, for listening to us in the Windy City. He does so on the Radio.com app. He points out that the Jets' job is an excellent choice. Tons of picks. You got a young quarterback in Sam Darnold, whether you like him or not. I'm not exactly sold on Darnold, but they have solid wide receivers. The Jets' defense is actually pretty good and will get better under Saleh. You know, the Jets' job is a pressure cooker. You don't get time to learn on the job there. You had better be successful from day one. They've had enough losing in New York. You better start winning now. I think that's a tough ask, but give Saleh credit. He's going right into the fire.
Definitely, and I get the thing with all the picks. I get the fact that they have some pieces, and I actually am still high on Darnold. I'd take Darnold with the Niners. I would. I definitely would. Not for any serious draft capital, but if he was available tomorrow, I'd say pick him up, and I feel he could be, in Shanahan's office, be at least as good as Jimmy G. When I say the Jets' job is undesirable, it's because whatever the deal is with that ownership group and whatever it's been, the Jets have been in countless situations where, oh, now we have a new head coach, and we have a top pick, and we're going to do this. And how many times has it been a desirable thing, and someone goes there and flops?
Yep. That's a good point. That's an excellent point. Listen, we got to step aside. 2 hours down, one more hour to come. From the 510, Bonte still listens, so I got to give him this from my good man, Mo in West Oakland. Tell Bonte's ass to come to work. Jeez, give him the damn Zoom code. My God, man. Come on, Bonte. Get the Zoom code. Bonte's the best. Him and Butcher and Kate are crushing it in the mornings, so we want you to listen to them every Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 10. They'll be on tomorrow as well. I know tomorrow's a holiday for everybody, but they're going to be in tomorrow and getting the job done. All right, we got Shamari and Coase. One more hour to come. We'll get more into the National Football League, including breaking down today's games moving forward. What are you looking forward to in that Kansas City-Cleveland game? And can Baker Mayfield pull off another stunning upset like he did last week in Pittsburgh? That's all straight ahead. Join us, 888-957-9570 right here at 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.